This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. Tomorrow, March 5th, marks Super Tuesday, the day 15 states head to the polls in the presidential primary. Although Wisconsin is not one of them, political enthusiasts in our state remind us that Wisconsin is still likely to play a key role in the 2024 presidential election. We are joined by two of those political enthusiasts today, conservative radio talk show host on WISN, Dan O'Donnell, and longtime Democrat and radio host on Up North News Civic Radio, Pat Kreitlow. Welcome to both of you.
Hi, Lisa. Thank you.
Hey, Lisa. Thanks for having us.
Hey, this should be a good conversation. Let's get started. So we're going to show a map of all the states that are up in this presidential primary tomorrow on Super Tuesday. There are 16 states in one U.S. territory, including one third of available delegates up for grabs tomorrow. Dan, I'm going to start with you. Do you have any big predictions about what will or won't happen tomorrow on Super Tuesday?
Yeah, Donald Trump and Joe Biden are going to win pretty much everything. I hate to say it, but this primary has been over for quite some time. I know Nikki Haley is still running. She just won the Washington, D.C. primary. Biden has a primary challenger in Dean Phillips, and Marianne Williamson, after uncommitted, got a massive share of the vote in Michigan, revived her campaign. But look, this general election matchup is going to be a repeat. It's going to be a rematch from 2020. And I think pretty much it's all over but the shouting at this point. And now we can get used to these two guys shouting at each other as the general election campaign really heats up.
Hey, Pat, would you agree with that? Any possibility for a Super Tuesday upset this time around?
No, I would agree entirely. Thanks for having me. And again, apologies for a bit of a cold I seem to have picked up a little bit earlier here. I think the only surprise will be any surprisingly lackluster result by either person, Trump or Biden, which will be trumpeted as a lack of enthusiasm, which I don't necessarily buy into. Again, we're just too far out. And there have been years where Super Tuesday was a big deal. And by the way, not to get ahead of ourselves, Super Tuesday 4 years from now is going to be a big deal. There won't be a Trump or a Biden. You know, McConnell will be gone. Pelosi will be gone. It'll be a whole new generation of things. So if we can get through this election where people aren't as enthusiastic, I'm very much looking forward to how Super Tuesday is going to look in the years to come.
So predicting more excitement in 4 years. Okay. And we have an area of agreement. So that's a good way to start the show here. So Nikki Haley has been a thorn in former President Trump's side for a while now. I know previously she had vowed to stay in the race through the convention in Milwaukee. Dan, do you think that she'll still be part of the conversation in Milwaukee in July?
I think it's entirely possible, but obviously not as a Republican. I think the No Labels campaign, which has been looking to get a candidate to run, Joe Manchin was thought of as probably the most likely, but he announced that he wasn't going to, even though he's not running for another term as senator from West Virginia. So No Labels has been looking for a candidate. If you think about it, Nikki Haley is really the perfect one. Right before the South Carolina primary, her home state, where she did get 40% of the vote, Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, said that Haley was by far the best surrogate that Democrats could ask for because she's ripping on Trump ostensibly from the right. She's saying, look, Donald Trump is not a true conservative. He can't win in November. She's saying all the things that Democrats are saying about Donald Trump as well. If the aim of the No Labels ticket is to either make a big enough showing with people who don't particularly like Trump or Biden, or as I suspect, it's to continue to be a thorn in Trump's side by essentially taking just enough votes away from him so that Biden does cruise to re-election, Nikki Haley would probably be their perfect candidate. And she just came out and said, look, remember that pledge that I made before the first debate? Well, that was with a completely different RNC. Now, one of the co-chairs of it is Trump's daughter-in-law, so I don't feel bound by that pledge. it just makes a lot of sense that she might run either as an independent or on that no labels ticket.
Well, and Nikki Haley seems to be having an interesting impact in Wisconsin. When you look at the Marquette Law School poll results, will show that results are from January polling of registered voters, showing that when Trump and Biden are neck and neck generally in Wisconsin, but then when Biden is paired with Haley, she wins by a significant margin. Specifically, when voters were asked if the election was held today between former President Donald Trump and President Joe Biden, who would you vote for? Results show that tie at 49%. 2% were undecided. When that same question pitted Biden against UN Ambassador Nikki Haley, much larger margin, with Haley at 57% and Biden at 41%, with just 1% undecided. Pat, when you look at those results, what do you think they tell us?
Well, they would tell me something if they were October numbers, but in the first week of March, not nearly so much. And look, again, this is not a high enthusiasm election here. And for Nikki Haley, again, she has a very moderate appearance, and her personality can take her a long way toward appearing to be, you know, a viable moderate. But then her positions, you know, keep bringing her back over to the right about endorsing invading Mexico and saying she's a proud union buster and increasing the age when Americans can get Social Security benefits. She said Florida's don't say gay law doesn't go far enough, and on it goes. So image is always one thing. And by no means, I have a lot of respect for Nikki Haley. I'm not looking to compare her to Sarah Palin. This is just for historical reference, that when Sarah Palin first came on the scene, people said, oh, wait, who is this? But as they learned more about her, you know, there was less enthusiasm. And I just feel that's going to apply here for Nikki Haley with her positions rather than her appearance. On appearances alone, you know, she does have that very moderate stance that says, you know, I'm here fighting for women, but when you look at where she would actually stand as elected, that's something the Biden campaign would do a lot of work with if she were either the nominee or a third party candidate.
Dan, Wisconsin was a never Trump state back in 2016 when Ted Cruz won Wisconsin. How have Wisconsinites changed the way they view the former president since that time?
Well, I think Wisconsin has come on board. I mean, one of the leading voices in the Never Trump movement was Charlie Sykes, who I believe just left his post as the head of the Bulwark. But remember, he was back in 2016 on the radio every day hammering home that Donald Trump can't win. Donald Trump will be the death of the Republican Party. So you had a massive chunk of voters in southeast Wisconsin, the all-important WOW counties, Waukesha, Ozaukee, and Washington, hearing that message over and over and over again every day, and they're not anymore. I believe Republicans are far more unified. There was just a poll out, I think it was New York Times, Siena, that found 97%, and this is nationwide, of course, they didn't break it down by state, but 97% of Trump's voters from 2020 said that they were going to vote for him again, whereas that number was only 83% for Biden. Now, that's sort of normal for an incumbent to lose some after the first term of his presidency. And let's face it, Biden's first term has not gone all that swimmingly. But it does say something about the role of a third-party candidate for both sides. If you take a look at the polling done right now, and as Pat said, he's absolutely right in that. Look, it's February, or excuse me, March. We just started March. The election's not until November. But in every single swing state, okay, every single swing state, Trump actually does better against Biden when Jill Stein and Robert F. Kennedy Jr., as well as Cornel West, are thrown into the mix. In other words, when it's a five-way race, which it almost certainly will be in November, as opposed to just a head-to-head matchup. So the bottom line is that both of these candidates are susceptible to hemorrhaging votes from a third party candidate. I think there are clear warning signs for both, especially if, as I suggest, is likely to happen, Nikki Haley runs as a third party candidate.
Let's look at some of that polling about third party candidate impact. In that same Marquette poll where voters, registered voters, were asked in January, they talked about a theoretical five-way race on the presidential ballot. 16% of voters, these are Wisconsin voters, said they would pick independent candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. over Biden and Trump. Another 4% said they'd support Green Party candidate Jill Stein. Independent Cornell West got 2%. Pollster Charles Franklin has said that historically, Wisconsin generally only has 3% of voters going the route of independent here. Just Robert F. Kennedy again. This is a January poll, 16%. Are you concerned about a third party candidate impact on President Trump, Pat?
I am not, because again, come November, things become much more binary to more voters. And I would rely on Sam Wong, who's a Princeton data scientist who studies gerrymandering and democracy. And he just put out a reminder from a historical standpoint that since 1900, the top eight third party candidates have averaged 12% of the vote and 23 electoral votes. You need 270 to win. And let's remember, Ralph Nader got 3% and zero electoral votes. The high point was Teddy Roosevelt running as, again, like Trump, an incumbent former incumbent Republican. He got 27% of the popular vote and 88 electoral votes. There's just not the history there. I think more and more people do see third party runs as more of a vanity project. And again, that's not to say there isn't a lack of enthusiasm with the candidates, but I think it becomes much more binary the closer we get to November.
Let's dive into the issues here a little bit. We saw both former President Trump and President Biden head to the border last week talking about border security. And I think I heard this on your show, Dan, also saw it in the news, Gallup poll for the first time showing Americans saying that border security is their number one issue in this election, topping out the economy and inflation. Dan, I'll start with you. Do you think this particular issue of border security is a top issue for Wisconsinites?
Not necessarily, because we are somewhat removed from it, being about as far from the southern border as possible. But there were roughly 1,000 to 2,000 illegal migrants who made their way to Whitewater, of all places. And this is something that people have noticed. There was actually just a big article written about this in the Washington Free Beacon last week about the impact on a small town like Whitewater here in Wisconsin. What this speaks to in terms of Wisconsinites getting a general sense of how things are, and I can tell you, living in the Milwaukee area, the prevailing sense of lawlessness under Joe Biden and Democratic leadership at both the state and local level, with violent crime just up exponentially since the pre-George Floyd era of 2019 and before, after decades, literally decades of decline, that feeds into that narrative that this is a lawless place. And then you'll notice Biden went to the border for the first time in a year, roughly a week after the murder of Laken Riley, who was killed by a Venezuelan migrant who could have been and probably should have been deported, or at least held for deportation twice, once in New York and once in Georgia. She puts a face to the illegal immigration crisis. We're not just talking about this in terms of statistics. Oh, 7.2 million border encounters and, you know, more than 38 states or whatever the numbers are. Now you have a human face. You say, hey, here's someone who shouldn't have been here, who allegedly murdered and brutally assaulted, before he did, this innocent nursing student. That's a major, major problem for Joe Biden, because a significant majority of people, according to this latest poll from the New York Times Siena polling organization, overwhelming majority, in fact, 72%, said Biden's policies will lead to more illegal immigration. That's a major problem for him.
Pat, what are you hearing from your listeners on this issue of the border? Do you think that President Biden has a strong ability to talk about the border and his policies?
Well, if I were giving him advice based on, you know, what we hear and what we see here in Wisconsin, it would be to do what he's doing, is to talk about the border and immigration. We need immigration reform. We need a stronger border. We need border reform. Donald Trump blew up the deal. He had the best bipartisan deal possible. He said so himself while president, that he couldn't do these things by executive action. He'd need Congress to act. Does he really think Congress is going to act any differently if he were going to get elected? They had the best deal possible. Immigration desperately needs reform. We know that in Wisconsin, this far removed from the southern border, that if we don't do something soon, if we were to just do what Trump says is round up and kick people out, we'd have no dairy industry in this state at all. Because one of those things we need from immigration reform is a year-round agricultural visa. Right now, the only agricultural visas go to people who come in and harvest crops, and then they have to go home. But there is no seasonal period for milking a cow. It's year-round. We need somebody like, you know, Derek Van Orden is sitting on the House Agriculture Committee. We need that kind of a pro-immigration reform stance, not demonizing all immigrants based on a few things as they happen, which, by the way, we see in every campaign, that instead of talking about the larger issue, we focus on one or two violent acts, you know, either by a parolee, Willie Horton, or now by an immigrant. And I'll tell you something, if you think one killing is of national importance, wait till you hear about all the children being gunned down in schools. So let's not work off of fear and violence and work on the larger issue of what Wisconsin needs. And that's how we get a stronger border and real immigration reform that this economy needs.
Well, hey, let's talk about age, another hot topic in this election. I'm going to ask you both. Dan, I'll start with you. How old is too old to be president?
What did the hippies say? Never trust anyone over 30? is too old. You know, the reality is that human beings are living far longer thanks to advances in medical technology and just sanitation and health and diet. So, and they're living more productive lives. You can be 95 years old if you're still with it and theoretically able to be president. The issue isn't age. The issue, at least as it pertains to President Biden, is in the rather obvious and apparently very rapid decline. Look, I know it's a comedy show. I know it's fiction, but it does speak a very powerful truth. Saturday Night Live, which I think we can all sort of agree, has a pretty left-wing bent being based in New York. Saturday Night Live did its cold open on all of the president's men, from Alejandro Mayorkas to the press secretary, Karine Jean-Pierre, telling us, just saying, you know, behind closed doors, Joe Biden is doing backflips. I believe they had Alejandro Mayorkas say he parkoured up the border fence and backflipped into the Rio Grande and came out with a fish in his mouth. And then, of course, they go to the actual Biden on FaceTime and he accidentally hangs up the phone instead of turning up the volume. This speaks volumes about the fact that everyone notices that not only Biden has slipped, and I defy you to go back and just listen to his campaign speeches in 2019, watch him in a debate amongst Democrats in 2019, even going into 2020, and compare that to now. But not only that, we're getting just flat out lied to. Oh, yes, behind closed doors, this is the sharpest president ever. When even SNL is making fun of that and saying, hey, come on, guys, it's obviously not true. You know, that's a problem for Biden.
Pat, how old is too old to be president? And I'll give you the chance to respond, Mr. O'Donnell.
Well, from Saturday Night Live, you just have to go to the Weekend Update skit that came up next to hear about the things that Donald Trump had said and the very real things he said over the weekend, once again confusing Biden for Obama and all of the other rambling and missteps. You know, if we're going to play gaffe versus gaffe for the next few months, that only looks to turn off voters. When I would remind voters that any president does only a fraction of the total job, from top-level staff to junior speechwriters to diplomats who are an ocean away. It's one thing to look at the captain, but what team looks out for your interests? Who's looking out for American democracy? Who's looking out for the economy? Who's looking out for healthcare? Who's building manufacturing jobs? Are both of these captains old? Yeah. I can't take away any of Biden's 81 years and make him younger. I can't take away any of Trump's 77 years, but I also can't take away any of his 91 felony indictments and, you know, all the other ways that he's done things that are keeping him in legal hot water. It's all of those things, not just two older guys making gaffes, that are going to determine this election.
Dan, talking about liabilities for former President Trump, he is the first former president in history to face criminal charges. There's four criminal cases, 91 felony counts. Should any of this matter to Wisconsin voters?
How long do we have? Because I could actually take about 15 minutes in system.
Not enough time.
every single one of those cases from a constitutional or law enforcement perspective. And in fact, it does look as though the Mar-a-Lago case and the January 6th federal case are not going to go to trial before the election. So those are almost certainly going to be moot. I know it's very, very sad. Dick Durbin was just on the Sunday shows, the Illinois senator, and saying, oh, how terrible it is. We can't interfere with the election by just launching criminal allegations that might or might not actually constitute unconstitutional prosecution of free political speech. But it won't happen before the election. The case in Georgia is imploding with the prosecutor rather obviously paying herself in the form of lavish trips to her boyfriend, the special prosecutor. And the Alvin Bragg prosecution is so laughable that even Democrats in New York are saying, yeah, the courts might actually just throw this thing out even before it goes to trial. So does he face jeopardy in that, yes, in a general sense, do voters not want someone who's criminally convicted? Roughly 33% of the Republican primary voters in a conservative state like South Carolina said, yeah, we're less likely to vote for a guy who's criminally convicted. And since you don't have time to hear 15 minutes of me explaining why these prosecutions are nonsensical, imagine what voters think, right? They want to hear, okay, was he criminally convicted? Yeah, okay, I'm not voting for him. So when you actually dive into the frivolous nature of pretty much all of these, it makes sense, but voters don't look that deep. They say, okay, is he criminally convicted? Yes. If that is the case, then I think it's going to be very difficult for Trump to win. Will that negate Biden's or will that negate Trump's advantage in all the swing states? Yeah, I think it's theoretically possible. So, yes, there is some danger. The question, though, is, are any of these cases actually going to go to trial before Election Day?
Pat, you take callers on your show. Do you hear concern from Wisconsin listeners about these criminal cases, the criminal charges?
They do, because it's in the news. But again, like a lot of voters, they see this and say, okay, Trump has done bad things. But what does this mean to me? What are each of these candidates going to do for me? And it's not that Democrats are relying on the judicial system in order to win the election. It's America relying on the judicial system to hear the evidence and make a determination. I would have loved for these investigations and trials to be wrapped up, you know, well before the point that we're at right now. But somebody has a record, a long record of delay, hoping to wear down who's ever suing him or seeking justice. And the timing of the trial only works out in Trump's favor to a point where there's evidence presented in a court of law, not on basic cable, and that we already know what some lower courts have said about Trump, whether it's committing business fraud, sexually assaulting somebody, defaming somebody, breaking a gag order. Eventually, these same courts will look at the Mar-a-Lago documents. They'll look at all of his efforts to try to overturn an election. And there may be justice done, but we also know one of the issues will be, will you vote for somebody who has promised to kill the investigations against him? I think there's a lot of Republican voters out there that would say, wait a minute. No, I'm Republican through and through, they might say. But, you know, that's no matter how you feel about the charges, to just get elected to throw out what the evidence says, I just don't think is going to sit well with a lot of voters.
A recent court ruling in Alabama said that frozen embryos have the same rights, legal rights, as children. Do you think, I'll start with you, Dan, do you think the concerns over access to IVF treatment, access to abortion, will play a big role in how Wisconsin voters turn out in November?
I'm not sure necessarily about IVF, but look, the last two statewide elections, Supreme Court in 2023, gubernatorial election in 2022, the two elections held since Dobbs v. Jackson was decided that June, have made it very clear that Wisconsin is a state, an overwhelming majority, I think. And obviously, I'm pro-life, but I understand which way the political winds are blowing. You've got an overwhelming majority of voters who say, look, we want the same status for abortion that we had when Roe v. Wade was valid case precedent and essentially the law of the land. There's no doubt in my mind. Look, you had the exact same candidate in Daniel Kelly running in 2020, where admittedly it was a bizarre election, the election held post-COVID. Remember that, where, you know, we were told we were going to spontaneously combust and everyone was going to die if they voted in person. He lost by 10 points. Right. And we were told, OK, well, there was a contested Democrat primary on the ballot and not a contested Republican primary. And he's going to do much better in 2023. He lost by 11 points. OK, where the primary issue was, in fact, Dan Kelly is going to take away a woman's right to choose. The one issue I think that killed Tim Michaels in 2022 was, in fact, the abortion issue. So there's no doubt in my mind. And look, you just saw yesterday, we're taping this on Monday. On Sunday, Jill Biden rallied women in Waukesha. What was her message? Republicans are going to take away your right to choose. This is the way I think Democrats understand that in a low turnout election, in an election where people aren't particularly jazzed about Biden or Trump, they appeal to the emotion that if you vote for the other guy, they're going to take away your right to an abortion. Thus far, it's worked. I have no doubt that they're doing the exact same thing in the 24 cycle.
So, Pat, do you agree abortion is a key issue for President Trump in Wisconsin?
I have said it will be a key issue post-Dobbs, frankly, until something, either Roe or something similar to it, is put back in place so that women once again feel that government isn't trying to take away control over their own bodies. And don't look at Wisconsin. Look at every other state, red states, that have held statewide constitutional votes on the issue of abortion. Much like I said about, you know, Trump getting rid of his own charges, I have so many friends who are Republicans up here in Chippewa County, and they just look at this and go, no, I want to talk about Republican views on tax policy, on education, on so many other things, but they get to this taking away a woman's right to make her healthcare choices, and that's a line too far for so many center-right voters.
So we're rounding out our 30 minutes, but I have to get in a question about the U.S. Senate race. I know 2 weeks ago, businessman Eric Hovde put his hat in the ring to challenge Senator Tammy Baldwin. I wanted to ask you about each of these candidates. Dan, I'll start with you. Can Hovde overcome this impression of him running as an outsider? Is that a big liability for him?
I mean, yes and no. I think the bigger issue is whenever you've got a Senate race in a presidential election year, it usually hinges upon how well each presidential candidate does. The idea of a carpetbagger coming in, yeah, they tried to attach that to Tim Michaels. Ultimately, was that what hurt him? Probably not. Democrats are clearly going full bore on that as the biggest issue for Eric Hovde, out-of-state rich guy. I don't know. I honestly am a believer that whoever wins the presidential race in Wisconsin is also going to take the Senate race.
Pat, do you think that Senator Baldwin is tough enough on the immigration issues? Is that going to be a liability for her against Mr. Hovde?
I think it might have been previously, but as soon as former President Trump single-handedly killed bipartisan border reform, he basically took that issue away from being used against her. She's going to be able to say that over and over again, but she won't say that over and over again. She'll come back to, again, those economic issues, her own record of what she's done over the past 12 years. And again, just that rather common sense, you know, appearance that she gives, that she's a good listener, she's invested in infrastructure, she's protecting women's health care rights, she's worked on Made in Wisconsin, you know, rules for the federal government. So she's got all these basic things that she can take to the voter. And I don't mean to end on a facetious note, but I can't help myself. The only other prediction I'll make about the Senate race is that is not the last time we've seen Eric Hovde take a shirt off.
Well, I'm going to give you each a last word here, a final thoughts. I'll start with you, Dan. If you were running former President Trump's campaign, what is the one key thing you would do between now and November in Wisconsin specifically?
In Wisconsin specifically, and it's specifically to Trump, stay on message. Okay, you see the stuff that's written on the teleprompter. You've got notes for what you're going to talk about. If it's illegal immigration, if it's hammering Biden on crime, let's not go off the cuff. Let's stay on message.
All right, Pat, what's your recommendation for President Biden here in Wisconsin?
I would take a lot of what Dan just said and say the same thing. Don't wander off too far. You're a good person when you speak off the cuff. It's oftentimes it's charming, but when you're being watched like never before, you have a message. You have a winning message. You have a message that's been good for the American economy, good for the American worker, and stay on that. And again, help voters feel that sense of power, especially in Wisconsin. Our voters here are more valuable, arguably, than any other states. So just keep telling that Wisconsin voter why their vote matters. 1.25 million people didn't vote who could have voted in Wisconsin 4 years ago. Talk to those people and get them into the voting booths in November.
All right. I thank you both for today's lively conversation. Appreciate you taking time out of your shows to join us.
Thank you,
Oh, the
Lisa.
pleasure's all mine.
All right. We hope to have you back. Thank you also to our viewers for joining us. Be sure to tune in again as we highlight the issues and sit down with the decision makers who make a difference for all of us.
You have been watching a production of Wisconsin Eye, your unfiltered window into legislative deliberations and public policy programming, where our mission is to provide Wisconsinites an opportunity to access the legislative process and connect with conversations that inform our citizenry. Please consider supporting our mission, and thank you for watching. Wisconsin Eye, policy made public.